Coming up on KUCB News, two more positive cases of COVID-19 were reported in Cold Bay, and attorneys have argued that Alaska Native corporations don't deserve CARES Act money reserved for tribes. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Officials reported two positive cases of COVID-19 in Cold Bay over the weekend. This marks 11 confirmed cases in the Alaska Peninsula Village. Upon receiving the positive test results, the unnamed individuals were placed in isolation, according to Eastern Aleutian Tribes, the regional tribal healthcare provider, which operates Cold Bay's Anna Livingston Memorial Clinic. Eastern Aleutian Tribes is working with city and state officials to ensure precautions are taken to protect anyone who may have been exposed to the coronavirus, according to a statement from the healthcare provider. One of the individuals is a non-resident, according to the statement, and the other is a resident of Alaska, but not of Cold Bay. Therefore, the state of Alaska will not show these as positive cases for the region. How the individuals contracted the virus is under investigation. Officials with Eastern Aleutian Tribes say that all 11 of Cold Bay's cases have been travel-related. And as of yesterday afternoon, there have been 103 positive cases of coronavirus in Unalaska. According to the city, none of these are attributed to community spread. There are currently two active cases. 2,127 people have been tested at Aluluk Family and Health Services. And Alaska's tally of confirmed COVID-19 cases rose by 42 yesterday, bringing the statewide total to 6,395. That includes residents and non-residents who have tested positive for the virus. There have been 252 hospitalizations since the pandemic hit Alaska in March and 44 deaths. Governor Mike Dunleavy's nominees to the board that regulates state fisheries drew a lot of heat at a recent confirmation hearing. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the timing of two of the appointments and the COVID-19 emergency makes it possible the appointees could set policy for Alaska's commercial, sport, and subsistence fisheries without first being confirmed by lawmakers.
This month's House confirmation hearing began with a relative unknown in Alaska's world of fish politics. Mackenzie Mitchell is an adjunct professor at UAF School of Management. She called in from a boat on the Yukon River, where she's working as a moose hunting guide.
It almost seems like your natural fit for the Board of Game.
That's House Speaker Bryce Edgman of Dillingham quizzing her on her credentials to serve on the Board of Fisheries.
Why would you put your name for the Board of Fisheries when your experience is on the game side primarily?
Thank you, Representative. I'd be interested in serving the Board of Game as well. My experience, I guess, in both fisheries and hunting in the state of Alaska has been, pretty well balanced.
As relevant experience, Mitchell has touted her graduate thesis on the region's halibut sport fishery, which is regulated by an international commission, not the state of Alaska. Her appointment was also endorsed by Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee. Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak quizzed a different nominee, John Wood, on his close ties to the governor. Wood had worked as an aide to Senator Dunleavy. He now describes himself as a retired attorney residing in the Susitna Valley.
Mr. Wood, are you currently in any capacity employed by the state presently?
Yes, I'm on the contract with the Department of Administration and the governor's office.
And who do you report to with that?
I report directly to the governor.
Stutes pressed him whether his relationship could influence his independence on the board.
No fish issues whatsoever are covered by the contract. So, no, I don't believe there to be any kind of a conflict.
That didn't satisfy the Kodiak Republican.
Personally, that's very alarming to me. I just believe that morally, if not ethically, it is a conflict, but I will move on.
But the most controversial nominee has been Abe Williams. He's employed by the Pebble Partnership, which seeks to develop an open-pit gold and copper mine on the headwaters of Bristol Bay, where he grew up.
You know, I've fished in Bristol Bay for 30 years. I've subsistence fished with my grandmother. I've sports fished with my family, my kids, and, you know, I cherish this resource just as any other.
Williams was also a plaintiff in a Pebble-backed lawsuit that sought to block Bristol Bay's Regional Seafood Development Association from using dues from commercial fishermen to oppose the Pebble mine.
My challenge to them was largely in recognition to large sums of monies that we pay into the organization being directed to organizations like United Tribes of Bristol Bay and Salmon State.
A judge dismissed the case last year. Bristol Bay's sockeye fishery is limited to 32-foot gillnet boats, relatively small compared to much of Alaska's fishing fleet. Successive proposals before the Board of Fish to open the fishery to larger vessels have been voted down. He denied being part of past efforts to change the rule, but said he can understand why the limit has critics.
As a fisherman, I can see where the limit of 32 foot really creates a strain on your ability to do so adequately and be safe when you do it.
One of the nominees was uncontroversial, longtime chairman John Jensen. The Petersburg resident is now the sole board member from a coastal fishing community for the rulemaking body that makes critical decisions of allocation that can affect livelihoods and impact food security. It's also the arbiter in long-running disputes between commercial fishermen and the charter fleet or subsistence groups. The committee opened the line to public testimony. All of the governor's nominees received support from the sport fishing sector, including Abe Williams. Here's Forrest Braden of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization.
Mr. Williams has taken flack today for his connection with Pebble, the Pebble Project, but I personally find it hard to believe that he would knowingly jeopardize the fishery that supported him for decades.
But commercial fishermen took a dimmer view.
It doesn't matter that Mr. Williams has fished Bristol Bay for 30 years. It matters that he works for the Pebble Limited Partnership.
That's Georgie Heverly, a Cook Inlet gillnetter and member of Anchorage's Fish and Game Advisory Committee.
And the lawsuit he was involved in against the BBRSDA was widely opposed by commercial fishermen. So to appoint him as a commercial fishing representative that does not even have the support of that sector is an insult to this process and an insult to Alaska's fishermen.
Others questioned the qualifications of the governor's nominees, all of whom live in the rail belt, on their grasp on subsistence fisheries.
Appoint someone who is actually qualified, not someone who is simply floated by or flown into our communities.
Stephanie Quinn Davidson is director of the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission for Tanana Chiefs Conference. She says the Board of Fish makes crucial allocation decisions that can impact food security in rural Alaska.
These decisions need to be taken seriously, and I have concerns with some of the responses you received from these appointees today that showed woeful inexperience with and knowledge of Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim fisheries.
Two of the nominees, Mitchell and Williams, were appointed in April. The legislature adjourned early due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and neither they nor Wood were confirmed. Legislative legal counsel says state law allows them to serve 30 days after the COVID-19 emergency declaration expires, currently mid-December. But if the state's disaster declaration is extended, the governor's Board of Fish nominees could serve until January 18th without being confirmed. That means nominees could vote on fisheries issues affecting Prince William Sound and Southeast without being confirmed by a majority vote of lawmakers. Susan Doherty, executive director of the Southeast Alaska Seiners Association, says that isn't right.
Unless being considered for reappointment, we believe no candidate should be able to sit and make judgment decisions that affect the lives and livelihoods or cultural opportunities of the people of Alaska without first being confirmed.
Yet the Board of Fish's schedule remains up in the air. Its support staff has pointed to risks of holding in-person meetings in Cordova and Ketchikan this fall and winter. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The Board of Fisheries has scheduled a work session for tomorrow to discuss revising how to hold regional meetings in the age of COVID. It's considering major revisions to the 2020-21 schedule. Attorneys argued in a federal appeals court on Friday that Alaska Native corporations deserve no share of the money Congress reserved for tribes in the CARES Act. At stake is perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars. But at times, the arguments in the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia turned to an age-old grammatical puzzle. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent, Liz Ruskin, explains.
Let's put the grammar question this way. If I say, we ate salty pretzels, cake, and candy, does that mean the cake and candy were salty too? The question is relevant because in the CARES Act, Congress set aside $8 billion to help tribes fight the coronavirus. And for a definition of what a tribe is, it referred to a 1975 law. In that law, Congress included Alaska Native corporations in a list and then followed the list with an eligibility clause. And at least according to some of the attorneys, that eligibility clause excludes the ANCs. Department of Justice Attorney Adam Jed argued that Congress would not have included Native corporations in a list only to exclude them by the end of the sentence. He says people just make grammatical mistakes sometimes, and you have to go by what Congress meant. And then Jed made an argument only an English major could love.
We actually cite a couple of grammar guides where we point out that this issue of, I think one grammar guide calls it an ex proposed modifier, is viewed by many as a common grammatical error, but is actually viewed by others as permissible.
The tribes trying to exclude Alaska Native corporations comprise a dozen from the lower 48 and a handful from Alaska. Arguing for them, attorney Riaz Kanji said Congress put other money in the CARES Act for the corporations and for Native people who aren't affiliated with a tribe.
Nobody, of course, wants anyone left out in the cold. And that would not happen to, you know, Alaska Natives in the urban areas or Alaska Natives in the villages.
More than a piece of the pie, tribes say they are standing up for the principle of sovereignty. Tribes have governmental powers, and they want it clear that corporations aren't the same thing. The corporations say they are also spending resources to help their shareholders combat COVID-19. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.